from the committee members with respect to guarantees, we did not meet in July. The meeting was canceled by the chair.
Let's see if we can cut through this gobbledygook a bit. Two of the Relocation Advisory Committee meetings, the last two meetings, were canceled by Chair Yolanda Goda, who's a La Familia Center boss, which gets its funding from the City Council, and as she has repeatedly been an unquestioning advocate of the Mercy Charities housing plan, it seemed to me, and that's been my impression of her chairship. She's engaged in discriminatory behavior towards members of the community who attended the Relocation Advisory Committee meetings that she didn't like. And what happened in the last two Relocation Advisory Committee meetings before they start, they canceled every meeting, and they involve her, not the majority. The majority wanted these meetings and were tenants who had eventually had just asserted their power. The city apparently thought that some of the tenants would be docile, some might be objecting, but that they could control the process. It didn't happen. The tenants all united together and said, where the hell are the guarantees? Where's the really adequate housing plan? We want you to talk to us about that. They directed Fitzmaurice and Hernandez to go to City Council and talk about that. They didn't. Instead, they talked about Mercy Charities housing, didn't really talk about the guarantees. And at that point, all meetings were canceled by Yolanda Goda and, I guess, presumably, Cecil Cirillo, who had the authority to overrule her.
Well, and I would say Tim and probably Hernandez had their fingers in that little pie also of canceling meetings. Neither one of those guys were willing to really negotiate with the tenants. They've all along they've been pushing this one plan. That's all they've been pushing. They have been unwilling to change a thing about this plan. And so the fact of the matter is the reason these meetings were really canceled is because Tim and Hernandez were going to have to come back and tell everybody that we did not get you any guarantees yet. Two, they didn't really want to have any kind of realistic negotiations with the tenants about anything, let alone guarantees or, you know, their involvement in creating a new process and coming up with a plan that would really work for them. You know, which is really what the tenants wanted. They wanted to work with the city and develop a plan that would have worked for them and worked for the city.
As usual, we're going to run out of time here, and I'm going to have to throw a couple of other items into the pot, and I really am sorry about that because, Scott, you are an invaluable resource to have here talking about this issue. You yourself lost your housing. Not a block and a half away from where this happened, right? Where the city moved in to red tag the building.
Right. The city. Well, it was actually there was a member of the household that was on probation, and the police came there and raided the house a number of times because he had a search clause in his probation, and so that meant they could search his bedroom and all the common areas of the house. And they never found anything at any of these searches. And the day before he was getting off probation, they came and did their last raid of the house. And when they did that, they still didn't find anything. And as they were leaving, one of the cops said, well, this house looks like it has a number of building code violations, and we're going to turn it into the building department. Lo and behold, not too much longer later, our landlord started receiving letters from the building department saying that they wanted to inspect the house because they had received a complaint. Well, he came and talked to us, and nobody at our house had complained, but we told him, you know, that there was this thing with the police. And then he showed us the letters that he got from the the planning department. And there was a CC to one of the police officers that on the list of people that were CC'd on this matter. One of them was a police officer.
This was police politicking to punish people in the house when they lost their power to do probation searches, right, or paroles. Right,
yeah. And, you know, so my landlord put off, you know, came up with as many reasons. Every time that there was a scheduled inspection, he'd always cancel at the last moment or whatever.
Was your house really in bad shape, realistically speaking? Was it a danger to people living there?
No, it wasn't really a danger to people living there. It was, you know, it was kind of funky. You know, it wasn't you know, your better homes and garden type deal. But it was a place where I was comfortable to live, and everyone else that lived there was comfortable to live there. And most of us don't have most of the people that were in that house.
How many were there?
Well, it differed at varying times, but around the time when we were getting evicted.
95 or something?
No, this was in 98. Around the time when we were being evicted, the house had gotten down to about 7 people. You know, at varying times, sometimes there'd be 20 people living there, other times there'd be, you know, 4 or 5 people living there. The house was constantly in flux.
This is one of the, interestingly enough, one of the Pinole properties, which I guess the city is now looking to acquire in hopes of perhaps some kind of a project which doesn't even involve existing tenants at all, and they can just build something without relocating anybody, without consulting anybody. I know that was on the closed session.
Well, there is one person that lives on the property. There's two properties that my landlord owned, adjoining properties, and there's a small house on the other property where that an old man is currently renting.
Right, but that would be certainly a lot cheaper than relocating dozens of families.
Right, one person is a lot easier to relocate.
Right,
but although, you know, old people, they've been having a problem with Mary Curry, so this old man may also become a very big problem.
Tim Fitzmaurice's nemesis, but that's a whole other story. I'm going to make a couple of announcements now, and I'm going to invite you, don't forget, this program will resume. We're going to be bounced out by Dennis around 8 o'clock and probably a little before. He's usually demands a lot of elbow room.
Well, he's one of those overbearing talk show hosts.
Yeah, I've heard about them, and I don't much like them. We will be returning on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning, and we go till 1:30, so don't forget to tune in. And off times between now and then, you can call 423-HUFF, 423-4833. But some announcements. Jenny Garcia, I guess she's the sister of the, or she's the mom, I'm not quite sure who, one of the two. She's the mom of Danny Garcia, who was shot dead by police a year ago in San Jose. We're going to have her on the air interviewed on Sunday. That should be quite an interesting interview. Plus her daughter, or perhaps her son, one of her, who's still alive, who is a witness to this shooting. Jenny had directed her daughter to call 911 when the mental health worker assigned to the case could not be reached by Paige. Danny suffered from schizophrenia. This is the man who was killed and had a bad reaction to his medication. He'd been delusional, thought someone was trying to hurt his 12-year-old daughter. Danny's sister called 911, and hence our name of our program, Dial 911 for Murder. Chief of Police Lansdowne in San Jose had this subsequent shooting, as indeed Garcia was shot dead, and we're going to be talking about the details on Sunday, declared a justified shooting within 30 minutes. So he beat out Chief Belcher by an hour and a half. Belcher took 2 hours to declare the Happy John Dine shooting a justified shooting.
Well, that's because Belcher had to go to the, what band was playing in town that night?
Oh, the Catalyst?
Yeah.
Check it out. It was indeed a Catalyst. Of course, it was Catalyst bouncer Ben Newman was, in fact, the originator of the complaint against Happy John Dine, but
Eddie Vedder and his band were playing that night.
I see. Well, these historic details are so important. As you know, you may remember, Scott came in from a Steve Argue for a city council candidate organizing meeting, which apparently is happening every Thursday at 4:30 in Loudoun Park. Is that right?
Well, I think the next meeting is going to be on Tuesday. 4:30 or 5:15 or something like that.
In any case, if you have a question on that, give a call to the Huff line. We'll try to get you the straight dope.
But there may be a city council meeting on Tuesday. And
well, maybe
so
we can hold it in city council chambers and take over the requisite chairs. Are these old fuddy-duddies who's going to be running things? I mean, they're lame ducks, let's face
right.
it. There is a People's Democratic Club general meeting tonight. Started 15 minutes ago. This, I guess, is being held by the liberal hacks, as distinguished from the conservative hacks around this issue. I guess the Kennedy-Larson forces, Kennedy-Darling-Larson forces, for all you Santa Cruz politicos, failed to take over bid. Instead, it's the Ed Porter-Emily Riley forces. I'm not sure who's controlling the People's Democratic Club at this time. I guess Porter.
The Ed Porter-Bob Tarrin faction.
Oh, the Porter-Tarrin faction. All of them equally uninterested in rights for tenants, it seems. Although Porter did make some positive statements by email We'll see if he has any positive statements to make in the campaign, which is coming down the pike. Porter is a perennial also-ran on this stuff, but this time it looks like he's being tapped as a mainline scan candidate. There's going to be a... Anyway, the People's Democratic Club is meeting tonight, 7:30, the business meeting at Loudoun Nelson. And then at 8 o'clock, they're going to have a panel discussion featuring two members defending a more progressive... Democratic Party, and two favoring consideration of the Green Party. It's enough to make you want to stay home. But and if you want to check
it
out...
What it is to see the People's Democratic Club last election... Even though Tim got
Fork-tongued Tim?
Right.
Yes.
Even though Tim got more votes than Linda Steinow, so he should have been endorsed by the PDC, the fact that he wasn't registered as a Democrat, the PDC refused to endorse Tim, even though they, by their bylaws they couldn't endorse Linda because she received too few votes. Mm-hmm. And so this is a change that
they
want.
That was thanks to my fine flyer, by the way, which was Linda Steinow and Scott Kennedy, a marriage made in Canfield's office.
But as it happened, now what they want to do is they want to allow not only Green candidates to be endorsed by the PDC, but also people that are registered as Greens to become members of the PDC. Because right now, if you're not registered as a Democrat, you technically can't be a member of the PDC.
And for those who want to follow this more closely, show up at Loudoun Nelson Center, which is where actually this whole brouhaha is happening even now. I also want to remind you that tomorrow at 2 p.m. on the second floor of the library, Catherine Byers, Tim Fitzmaurice, and Keith Sugar will be, giving special oral ministrations to the business community in the question of the transient occupancy tax. Now, Scott and I may have a difference of opinion here. I feel that this crowd of business folks who's wailing about a 2% increase is rather self-interested, to say the least, and overly concerned about the issue. But you feel that they have not been properly handled by the city council, Scott?
Well, I think that they were ignored. They were intentionally left in the dark to the last moment. When the city first brought this up 2 weeks ago, they told the hotel owners about it a week ahead before that. The city's been mulling this over for at least 4 months now. They should have brought these people...
About putting a tax on the ballot that would give another 2% to homeless services.
Right, a tax on people staying in hotels. Right now there's a 10% tax, which is lower than most other jurisdictions in the Bay Area. Most places it's 12%, San Francisco it's 14%, Monterey is 14%. Mm-hmm. And most cities use this transient occupancy tax to fund social services. And they want to dedicate this 2% just to homeless services and supposedly building shelters. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and so I'm all in favor of raising this tax to 12%. But I do agree with the hotel owners that they were left out of the process and there could have been a better process.
Minute, you're talking about the most open city council in the history of Santa Cruz city council politics. These are the people who made sure that the tenants heard nothing about the Dolphin Lee until it was actually all ready to roll. These are the people who closed down the sleeping ban meetings, and then when we came back to vote on the sleeping ban ballot measure, tabled everything so we couldn't say a word about it. Are you suggesting these people are engaging in closed processes?
Right, I think they are. I think that they, when they look at an issue, they determine, you know, when should we bring the public into this? It's just like this recent thing they did at the redevelopment agency this past week. They had different things in the agenda packet depending on what day you wanted and looked at it concerning the Dolphin Lee. And on the last day, they had this item about land banking the Dolphin and the Rex Court and just completely not doing anything with the Lee property. And if we had known that on Friday, we could have organized around those points, but that didn't come out till Monday. I mean, till Tuesday at the meeting was the first time I saw anything on that.
I remember that you yourself brought up a point about a Brown Act violation when the sleeping ban amendment that Fitzmaurice was proposing to put on the ballot. Fitzmaurice had information he was reading from which he did not give to the public.
Right.
And that and was not shared with the community. So when this came up again with Catherine Byers doing exactly the same thing, she had a long resolution, 5-point, 6-point resolution on the Dolphin Lee. We started, you know, barking from the audience, where the hell is the Brown Act here? You've got to share this with the audience. And Rotkin, of course, said, we don't have to share it with the audience. But Byers, in a nervous tizzy, had some copies made, and we got to see what it was 3 minutes before they passed it, what they were passing. And we're going to be passing that on to you next time when we return on Sunday. We don't have a lot of time, as I said. I'm going to continue with a few announcements. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., not only does the City Council subcommittee meet in the second floor of the library, if you want to discuss this tax, along with a bunch of other characters in business suits, if you can stand them. Some of them are fine people. I can't stand their arguments. But at 2 o'clock, across town, at the Chamber of Commerce, at the Holiday Inn, a strange enough place, at Michael Schmidt's office, homeless activists will be meeting to talk about what next. Candlelight vigil, as perhaps Becky Johnson is proposing. Perhaps a PN at the Bookshop Santa Cruz in order to show our solidarity against vandalism at Borders. Just kidding. A little joke on that one, folks. But there are many different possibilities for what can be done.
Well, there's also the squat at the Rex Court.
And, of course, Scott's proposal of a squat at the Rex Court as a way of getting some immediate affordable housing. That's going to be at 2 o'clock on Friday, and that's at Dakota and Ocean Streets in the Holiday Inn in the Chamber of Commerce area. On Saturday, there'll be a ROAR meeting. At least I'll be there briefly to see if anybody shows up. 2:30 at San Lorenzo Park, where Food Not Bomb serves on Saturday afternoons at 2:30. Come on down. ROAR is Restore Our American Rights, group concerned with rights for people in vehicles who live there, and also people who are homeless generally, or people who are concerned about homeless rights. The little heard from, but still not to be counted out, Residentes Unidos, organization of the Dolphin and Lee tenants and many community members, will be meeting Saturday, not Friday, as has been the case in the past, at 7 o'clock in the community trailer on Raymond Street. That exact address, Scott, on that?
No, it's just near the corner of Raymond and LeBrant.
It's kind of a block down from the, there's a kind of a playground area with a mural.
Well, it's a couple of buildings away from that.
A couple of
going
buildings.
Going towards the river.
It's ask, ¿dónde está, what, la community trailer? I'm not sure how you would say it, but it's on Raymond Street, and if you look around, you'll see this ugly-looking trailer we're all going to be meeting. Monday night, again, as we've talked about before, there's going to be another city council meeting, a full city council meeting in the library at 2 o'clock. 7 city council members all crammed into the second floor of the library. If you have any rotten fruit, I won't even suggest it. I might be arrested by Sugar's agents immediately.
Or maybe some chum.
Possibly, yes. Then Monday night, Becky Johnson has announced there will be a candlelight march to City Hall with a speak out at 8 p.m. More information, call Huff, 423-4833. That, of course, has to do with the city council's sellout on both the Dolphin Lee and the right to sleep at night. That those issues are both very important. We are going to delay our report from Nancy Nichols of the San Jose Community Homeless Alliance. He was going to call in and talk about the Cisco protest in San Jose. That's the situation where many homeless activists did a protest on Tuesday demanding that the Cisco turn over 1 year's salary for its CEO to homeless services. And since that's $126 million, that ain't peanuts, folks. I'm not aware that they are agreeing to do that, but sounds good to me. As I said before, we're going to be doing an update on the Danny Garcia case, the man who was murdered by police, among other killings in San Jose by the police department. We'll be talking about violence by police generally. Hope by that time Arnie Leff, council candidate and head of the CPRB, will have set up his promised, will either have withdrawn from the council race or will have set up a meeting to discuss the differences between Arnie Leff, council candidate, and Arnie Leff, CPRB sellout, because I think that's a really important distinction. I have, you know, minced no words about what I think around that issue. I notice around me the shape of the studio seems to be changing. A strange, ominous, earthy presence seems to be kind of twittering in. The threat of a Daryl Cherney song is getting closer and closer. I'm beginning to feel dislodged from my position of power here, and I'm trying to get it together. If I could find the eject button. Yes, that's very good. Thank you, Dennis. So, I'm hoping we can get our resident expert and barefoot scope it out artist Scott Graham to return on Sunday to really give us, assuming we have a Residencia meeting on Saturday night, which will be very nice. All you Residencia Unidos people, get it together. Come on down, 7 o'clock, the Raymond trailer, the trailer on Raymond Street, the community trailer about a block from the boardwalk, two blocks. I hope Scott returns, because we are going to be pursuing this, we're going to be continuing our analysis of the Dolphin Lee discussion, which in many ways is very revealing. We'll learn about the faux pas of Yolanda Goda, and I'm going to sign off now to give Dennis an additional 15 seconds.
Oh, you're so damn generous.
I am trying to be generous. Good point. I'm keeping my 13 seconds. You can just wait until the end of the show, Mr. Why Aren't You at the Board of Supervisors? All right.
And your 15 seconds are up, Robert.
Thank you very much. And please tune in on Sunday for the next edition of Bathroom Spears Broadside.
And that sort of cryptic comment about the Board of Supervisors meeting isn't about Board of Supervisors at all. It's about a California